Thank you for joining us for another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, I'm Larry Mueller. Today we visit with Barb Larson, UW Extension horticulture educator for Kenosha County. She always has great advice on things we can do in the garden or getting ready for the gardening season, and I hope you'll join in. Maybe you have some questions, maybe experiences to share. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or go ahead and post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. And Barb Larson, welcome back.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here. Happy spring or almost spring, I guess.
almost spring. It's going to be here. The next week, the temperatures are supposed to be
I heard
warm.
At least in southern Wisconsin.
At least in the southern part of the state, really warm. And you know, March is kind of, it's a good time to start planning the garden, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. If you haven't done the planning in January and February, now is the time to kind of figure out what you want to do. And if you haven't gotten your seed orders in, take care of getting those done and try to figure out where you're going to put things and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, now's the time.
Yeah, I just got a Junks catalog in the mail last week.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. So, I'm still getting them in my office. Lots of catalogs every day. Yep.
How do you decide if a plant's going to work in your garden?
So I always like to look at what are the conditions in your garden. As gardeners, we always like to kind of cheat Mother Nature, and that's okay for a few things, but you want to look at how much sun you have, how much sun or shade, what's mm-hmm. the drainage, what's the soil type, and try to grow things that you think are going to really be successful, because you're going to be a lot happier gardener if you do it that way. And if you're growing vegetables or fruits, for goodness sake, grow things that your family will eat. It's fun to try something new or different, but if you're growing lots and lots of things and nobody wants to eat it, and then you feel guilty about what do I do with it, you can always donate it to a pantry or something. But grow what you like and what you enjoy.
You know, I experimented with some really hot peppers last year, and Emily just did not like it. I got three pepper plants here that, I cannot eat all this. So the neighbors fared pretty well.
I had hot peppers.
No one was short of hot peppers in our neighborhood, believe me. Oh, my goodness.
The other thing to remember is every year is, first of all, a new start, so that's exciting.
Yeah.
But it's also an opportunity to look at what failed last year may not fail this year, because every gardening year is a little bit different. Yeah. So just because you had problems one year with something, there's no reason not to try it the second year if you really want to really love it.
You know, there are some plants, and this often comes up on the show in the fall, we hear about, can I bring my geraniums in for, mm-hmm. What can I do to bring them in over winter? Well, now here we're done with winter for the most part. And what about taking them back out?
Sure.
How do you know when it's safe to take
most of them, you're going to have to wait until the middle of May until we get past that frost, that last killing frost time, because they're not completely hardy. I have a big geranium sitting in my dining room window that I keep looking at and going, okay, now I've got to take cuttings off of this because it still looks really good. So that's one thing to do, is they tend to get long and leggy. So you can either do a combination of taking stem cuttings and rooting those and then potting those up so you get new plants, or just cutting them back to a side shoot or something like that to kind of bring them back down in size. And now's the time to do that.
And when you're doing cuttings, what do you cut off what?
You want to cut right below what's called a node, and that's where a mm-hmm. leaf comes out. And you want about one or two nodes. One goes underneath in the potting soil, so underneath the soil surface, mm-hmm. and the other above. And so you can start at the tip, but you don't have to do just tips. You can also do down along the stem, too.
Okay.
So some things are really easy to root. So the things like the geraniums are really easy to root. A lot of the some of the house plants and other things that we use outside as kind of foliage plants, those are usually pretty easy to root with cuttings. So there's lots of different options.
And use some sort of rooting mix?
Some you have to, some you don't. So you may want to either go to the library and get a good reference on doing cuttings and propagation, or some of that stuff is available online too.
Guy in St. Paul, Minnesota has a concern for us. Let's go there. Guy, hi. Thank you for calling. Is he there? Oh, I think we... Guy, are you there? We must have lost him. Let's go to Antonio in Green Bay. Hi, Antonio.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, good morning.
I love that little radio sketch that you had during the fundraising. It was incredible. Whoever wrote that, it was very creative.
It was fun.
Okay, since I got that out of the way, I have a Mediterranean fig tree. And it is in a pot, and it's getting to be too big. I was wondering if I can plant that outside in Green Bay.
So you can plant it outside, but I don't see that you will be able to get it through the winter. Green Bay is just a little too cold. I've certainly known actually gardeners in southern Wisconsin and northern Illinois that are love fig trees. Most of them have been, quite honestly, they're Italian-American or Italian heritage. They grew up with figs. They were great gardeners. And in the very southern tier of counties, they were able to get them through the winter time. A lot of times what they would do is kind of like you do with a standard rose or a tree rose, where they would partially dig up the root ball, lay them down, and then cover them really well and insulate them for the winter time. But I think to try to do that in Green Bay, I think you're way too far north to try to do that. I don't think you'd make it through. It's borderline in the southern part of the state.
So leave it in the pot, take it outside, then drag it back in.
Yeah, bring it back in.
There you go.
You can carefully prune it to help keep it in shape. Put it on some sort of a dolly or something like that. I've seen some really big fig trees that are, you know, on wheels that they move in and out.
Oh, sure. I was thinking of another plant, a cactus. A friend, Jenny Bostian, had, Jenny and Lloyd Bostian had a very large cactus that they would haul in and out. And I always marveled at the fact that they could actually get that prickly thing in and out of the house. But they managed to do it.
That's good. That's good. So I would say, yeah, if you love your fig, and you certainly don't want to lose it to a winter kill. So
no, yeah, for sure.
Continue doing as you're doing.
Angela in Stoughton, it's your turn. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hi, thank you. I was wondering if there is a purple-colored ground cover, a perennial, that I could put in my outside garden. It's under a tree, and it's flagged, and it's surrounded by flagstone.
Purple-colored, purple flowers, purple leaves?
Purple flowers. Sorry, I'm being vague.
No, it's okay. Let's see. I'm trying to think of something that immediately comes to mind, and the one that comes to mind as a ground cover would be vincas, that would have a purple flower in early spring.
Okay.
The other is, they're not purple, but have you considered some of the burgundy heucheras, which are also known as the coral bells?
You'd
have multiple ones, and some are those burgundy shades are even almost purpley colors.
Yeah,
oh my
they're
goodness.
Really pretty.
Okay.
They're really pretty.
Yeah,
can you spell that for me?
Oh, good. You're going to make me spell on the air. It's H-E-U-C-H-E-R-A. That's close. I had to be tutored in spelling when I was in grade school. So.
I won't hold it against you. Look at the position you have now.
Spell checker is my friend.
So if I go to my local garden center, I ask for heucheras?
Yep. Yeah. In fact, there are hundreds of them now. It's a very popular shade, part shade ground cover. The other interesting thing, or kind of nice thing about them, is that they will keep their leaves through all or most of the winter, too. So you get even that kind of winter interest from them. They don't completely die back to the ground.
Oh, my goodness.
And for the purple or the burgundy-colored ones, the flowers usually are white. And they're kind of white, narrow stalks that stick up. So,
How tall does that get?
Depends on the variety, but they're usually 8 to 12 inches, maybe 16 inches. They don't spread a lot. They just get wider. So they get kind of a mound. So you'd probably have to have multiple ones. Or you can mix them in with some other kinds of things, too.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you. Enjoy your weekend.
You too. Thanks
you as
for
well.
Calling.
Thank you very much for calling, Angela. Bill in Madison, your turn. Hi, Bill.
Hi, good morning. A purple ground cover that I love, it spreads nicely, is a juga. But that goes nicely between rocks. But anyway, that's what I called about. I have started onions from seed, and they're long day onions. So I know that at a certain time of day length, they're going to start to bulb. Do I have to worry about that under lights? Should I keep the fluorescent lights down to what the daylight is now?
Yes. You should. Because remember, as you mentioned, they are responding to day length or night length. And if they are at the point that could trigger them going ahead and bulbing early. So you want to be careful with that.
Okay.
And I do want to make a comment. I did immediately think of a juga also. And in some areas, you may be okay, but a juga is in that borderline getting to be invasive. That's why I'm a little cautious with it. But I appreciate you bringing it up.
Yep.
Good. All right. Thanks.
That's okay.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. And let's see. Let's go to Guy. Guy from St. Paul is back. Hi, Guy. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry.
What can we do for you?
As an expatriate from Wisconsin living in St. Paul, I just want to say that extension service in Wisconsin is such a great resource, and Barbara's always one of my favorite guests on your show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
My issue is I have a garden surrounded by dog owners, and I love my neighbors, and they're, as a whole, pretty good about picking up after their pets, but you know when the spring thaw comes, I get a little concerned about my potato bed, and I'm wondering if it's something I should be concerned about, and if so, what is it that I could do about dog runoff?
So, well, I think you called me because you know I have dogs. Maybe you don't remember. So I guess I would, yes, I know there tends to be a little bit extra in spring, and you might nicely talk with your neighbors about your concern. I think that would be the kind of fair thing to do. But unless it's to the point where, you know, there's a major rain or it really runs into your yard, I guess I wouldn't be too concerned about it.
No,
because most of it's going to go down into the ground where they are.
So I wouldn't worry about
I wouldn't be too concerned about it. And this is one of those nice neighbor kinds of things. I would just nicely share your concern with your neighbors and say, I know it's, you know, at this point, kind of you got a big job, but I am a little concerned.
There we go. Thanks, Guy, for calling. Appreciate it. And Glenn in Muskego up next. Hi, Glenn. Thanks for calling.
Good morning. Thank you. I stored some canna lily bulbs in my basement over the winter in tubs with sawdust. And I add a little bit of water here and there just so the bulbs don't dry out. But now some of them have sprouted, and I've got foot to a foot and a half plants on top of some of the bins. Do I keep those and plant those as they are? They're a little anemic. There was just one real small basement window on the other side of the basement. Other than that, no light. But do I cut those off before planting them outside or plant them as is?
Nope. Pot them up right now, and you'll be ahead of your neighbors with your cannas.
Yeah.
So
go ahead and put them in pots and put them in a sunny window, and you're actually just getting a start. You'll have to wait to plant them outdoors until, Muskego, you're going to have to wait until probably mid-May after danger of frost, unless you want to haul them in and they're in containers or something. But otherwise, let them go ahead and get started, and you'll have flowers on them before anybody else in the neighborhood.
That's great. Thank you very much.
Okay. Yeah, thanks, Glenn, for calling. Again, you can join us, 800-642-1234. Jesse in Waukesha has a question. Hi, Jesse.
Hello. So I have some old tea-like clothesline hangers in my backyard, and I never use them. And I got the idea that I'd like to string some cables from them going straight down and to a little planter box and have some kind of creeping vine go up them.
Okay.
Kind of build like a foliage wall. I was wondering what kind of vine would work well in southern Wisconsin, preferably something that's got some flowers to it.
Morning glories.
Yeah, I was
morning
glories. Yeah,
is what I do.
Yeah, and that's what I would start with annual vines just to see if you actually like what you're getting. So yeah, Larry mentioned morning glories, moonflowers. Those are all good kind of starter ones, and they're all annuals, so they'll die back at the end of the year. They grow fast. And then if you like the looks of them, then you can think about some of the different perennial vines. I have a wisteria that I really like that's up. Then you can also look at things like the clematis, the vining honeysuckles. So there are a lot of options for the perennials. But I would try it a year and see if you really like the looks of it. Once you go to the perennial vines, you have to look at also weight and how much whatever you're growing on can hold it. The other thing with vines is you have to consider how is it going to climb or attach. So some are twiners. Some twine where the actual stem twists around whatever the support structure is. Things like clematis, it's the petiole, so the stem for the leaf. Some things like Boston ivy have little, they call them hold fast, but they're like little suction cups. So those won't work if you're using, wall lines or wires. And some things don't like to grow on wire, I've found, because it gets too hot for them. So, try a couple of different things. Look at the weight and see what you like the looks of.
Yep.
What about drainage for those? Should it be a closed-in container or something with some rocks underneath it so it drains,
suggest it in the ground, yeah.
Put it right in the ground.
Yeah, you don't need a container for them. And in containers, it doesn't give good drainage just by putting rocks in the bottom of a container. You have to have holes in the bottom.
Well, but digging out underneath where I want to plant a box. The thing is, it's kind of an eyesore in my yard. I'm trying to make it look pretty.
Sure.
So I'm going to frame out a little box plant, hopefully I can put some vines in there.
So you're going to put like a little raised bed around it or something, or a planter?
Right.
And with an open bottom?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you could do that. That's fine.
Okay. Well, thanks for the advice.
Okay.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. We tried a clematis, and for some reason, it goes and then it dies. I just can't get it.
So I had one house I lived in. Clematis were fabulous. I had just the perfect place for them. Clematis really like that, the old saying is feet in the shade, head in the sun. Yeah. So they like the roots moist and cool, and then they like full sun for the top. So where I live now, it's really nice for a lot of plants because it's kind of a sandy loam soil, so it drains a lot better. But the clematis hate it. I can't grow clematis now.
Barb Larson, our guest for Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our on-air producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Next week on Garden Talk, we'll be visiting about the Olbrich Gardens and the Olbrich Gardens Flower Show, which is always a beautiful show. And I hope you can join us for that. Right now, though, taking a look at your garden and getting ready for it with Barb Larson, horticulture educator for UW Extension in Kenosha County. She comes by pretty often. It was always a treat to have her with us to talk gardening. And we have one open line at 800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mealer Show. Certainly love to hear from you. And let's go to Sue in Milwaukee next. Sue, thank you for waiting. Hi.
Thanks for taking my call. I want to take cuttings from my Pachysandra. And I'm wondering how early in the season I could do that and what kind of soil mix you would put them in.
So I would have to look it up to see if there's anything, you know, particular about Pachysandra, but I don't think it's difficult to do cuttings on that. I think roots almost on its own. So I would wait, though, until it's actively growing this spring.
Okay.
And I would wait until after it flowers. You know, Pachysandra's flower in, they're not very noticeable, people don't, but they do have that flower fairly early in the spring. So after they flower, then I would take cuttings at that point and put them in any kind of well-drained potting soil, kind of standard potting soil. They should root just fine.
Okay.
All right. Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. You mentioned flowering. It got me thinking this morning. I looked at Limey, and Limey has some flowers again, finally. It's been a little while. I was getting a little concerned, but then I see some new leaves are starting. And
just in time for mojito season this spring.
There you go. Laurel in Cottage Grove, it is your turn. Hi, Laurel.
Hi. I'm so excited to ask you these questions. I'm a native of Wisconsin in the area, but I live in Tennessee. So I'm kind of cheating. I'm going to do both. Ask questions. I want to bring my grandmother's, I brought some cuttings and some transplants of Snow on the Mountain and some vinca that my grandmother planted probably 60 years ago. I brought some from here, Cottage Grove, down to Franklin, Tennessee, where I live. So I want to know how long can these things last? They're pretty old. And also there's some peonies I want to transplant. I don't know if such an heirloom plant if it should be transplanted, but I have heard you can...
Okay. All right.
Living.
So most of these, like, and I'm guessing the Snow on the Mountain is the one that is a ground cover Snow on the Mountain?
It's a ground cover. It's variegated. And
yep.
I know it can really spread, but I just, and I suppose that's kind of it's perfect for what I need. I have a shady area down where I am. And like that.
So I'm going to caution, actually in the south you should be okay. Snow on the Mountain up here in the north tends to sometimes go a little crazy and get invasive in the south.
Yeah, it gets crazy. And so
yeah.
I've kind of created a little fencey area around
yeah.
there.
Yeah, that's fine. So let me share. Actually, I did a number of years ago, I did a program with horticulturists out of the south, and they were recommending... and it was at a box store kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And they were recommending Snow on the Mountain. And I said, whoa, wait a minute, don't do that. And
yeah.
In the South, it's not a problem because you know how when we have hot, dry summers, they brown out and look awful? That's
yeah.
what they do in the South all the time. So they don't get as invasive. So you may find that it's not quite what you expect down there. So I just wanted to share that with you.
Sure. But, I just want to look at it and remember her.
Sure. So that's fine. They transplant, as you know, it shouldn't be any problem.
Okay.
The same with vinca, any of the ground covers, they should be okay. You will, because it does get hotter down there, you may need to make sure you keep them watered a little bit better.
Okay.
Think about that. Peonies can be tricky to transplant. They transplant fine, but if you get them too deep, they won't flower. So
you
want to make sure that you plant them at the same depth they were planted here. But peonies live for many, many, many years, and so you should be able to do that.
Okay, last question on snapdragons. Mm-hmm. So tricky to, I need to plant some of those also. And what's the deal on the snapdragon? Because I love them and I want to have cuttings. Will they come back every year?
So you're talking.
She had this unbelievable flowering snapdragon dahlia and all that stuff, those pretty seasonal flowers.
So are you referring to a perennial snapdragon or the annuals were coming back from seed every year?
Do they have the perennial snapdragon? I think perennial because they always kept coming back. But
so
you have to pull the bulbs.
It was an old one, though. I bet it was coming back from seed.
I bet it was coming back from seed, too.
Yeah.
Oh, sure. Okay.
So they're probably self-seeding.
Okay. Gotcha. Okay.
So you could certainly dig them up and move them down. They're cool. They like cool temperatures. So in the south, they actually grow best in depending on how where you are in Tennessee. They may be more of a fall, early spring, even winter kind of plant.
Mm-hmm. Sure, got you. And then I appreciate all your work. I know of you. And then I've always been trying to take the extension Master Gardeners class. I don't know if you teach one up here, but they're so wonderful.
Good. Contact your extension in Tennessee. They'll be able to help you out, too.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Uh-huh. Yeah, thanks so much for calling. Those are great classes. Those are wonderful classes.
Yep. And we do teach one here, and so contact your county extension office to see.
I had a chance to talk to the Madison Area Master Gardeners Association a few weeks back, and it was what a good bunch of people.
They are.
They really are. Jean and Genesee, it's your turn. Hi, Jean.
Hi. I have two questions. Thank you so much for having me.
Sure.
All right. The first thing is I'm pretty discouraged as a gardener at this point in time because we have three different garden plots and they have all developed this like a black spot fungus or a brown spot or a red spot. I don't know what it is, but my plants start out, they look really good, and then all of a sudden these spots show up on the leaves, and within a few days, you know, they start shriveling and dying off, and it's spread to everything now. It's spread to my rhubarb, which is, you know, perennial, my peonies, and then it happens to my tomatoes, my peppers, my, you know, whatever I plant. It's really discouraging. So I'm afraid to plant anything now, and I'm just wondering if there's any way I can head this off and, you know, get on top of it before it even happens this year.
So it's very rare that it would all be the same fungal disease. It's probably an assortment of different ones. And
we use compost that we've got from our chicken coops. You know, we put the straw and, you know, kitchen scraps and, you know, and chicken scat from, you know, into a compost thing. And so I'm afraid we've, like, maybe spread something everywhere because we put that on all the garden.
I don't know that will. If you have diseased plants and it's not hot composted, that sometimes will not kill those fungal spores. And so it could spread it that way.
That's probably
what we do. Regardless of where you are, what you need to think about is what are the ways that you can reduce the chance of and basically make the environment so that it's not as favorable for disease development. So you want to make sure that if you can find resistant varieties, so look for tomatoes and peppers and other things that tend to be more resistant to fungal leaf diseases. Anything that you plant, make sure that you've got good space between them so that you get good airflow. When you water, use soaker hoses or water at the base of the plant so that you keep the leaves dry.
Right. We did that last year. Yeah.
That's really important.
Yeah.
And then another one is to use mulches so that you prevent splash from the soil up onto the lower leaves.
Yeah. Is straw okay for that?
Sure. If you use clean straw, that's okay.
Okay. And how about leaf cuttings? Grass cuttings.
Grass cuttings, if you don't have herbicides, I really like grass. Grass cutting. And you know what? Another is about 13 layers thick of newspaper, and then put your grass clippings on top of that. That works really well.
Oh, newspaper. Okay.
Okay. So,
pot even got it. I planted tomatoes and peppers in pots and put it up on my patio, and it's
still...
Well, the spores blow in the wind.
Yeah.
And then the other is make sure you wash your hands and everything in your tools between places so you're not spreading it either.
Okay. And then I have one other question. I want to support the monarch butterflies. And we've got some milkweed. And I've been saving the seeds, you know, seed pods and stuff. And I want to spread it. I've been trying to spread it in our yard. And I've got them now this year. I've got them from last year. And they're in my house. Is it too late to put those in the ground? Did they need to overwinter, do you know, in the ground? Because this is more or less...
This is the most popular question I've had this spring.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So they will germinate. They do not have to have the cold treatment, the cold moist treatment, but they germinate better if they have it. So the best way is to mimic Mother Nature and plant the seed in the fall. So you could spread it out there, or you could put it in a plastic bag and mix the seed with either just slightly damp peat moss or sand, put it in the refrigerator for about 6 weeks.
Okay.
And then plant it.
So it's not too late.
Nope.
This year.
Nope.
Yay.
All right.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And, you know, a caller suggested we had a couple of questions earlier, one about purple ground cover and another about a vine choice. And one person said, well, what about phlox for purple ground cover? And then suggested hops as a vine choice for the previous caller.
Yep.
That those could work. The hops would get a lot bigger, taller than the height of clothesline. But
sure.
I mean, they'll get 16 feet. But
oh, yeah. But that's a great suggestion.
But those are good ideas.
And phlox, I'm sure they're referring to creeping phlox. And, yes, that'll grow in shade. It tends to flower better, though, in sun. But, yep, that's another good option.
And, let's see, Gail in Milwaukee asked if violets, dandelions, and bulbs are good for pollinators. If not, can you suggest plants that are? She has a small city garden in Milwaukee.
Okay. So violets, I know, do have some bee pollination, but they're not a big bee plant or flower. No. So dandelions, absolutely.
Yeah.
So,
no problem there.
Yeah. Any of those flat, bright-colored, you know, they work really well. And bulbs, I don't know what kind of bulbs she's referring to. Some of the ornamental onions probably are because they're summer bloomers, but the spring bloomers probably not so much. There are some great lists. In fact, the UW Extension now has a publication, a really nice publication on encouraging pollinators. So
excellent.
If you go to the Learning Store or just Google Wisconsin Extension pollinators, you should be able to get it. So
that's really good. Yesterday we had the author, one of the co-authors of The Bees in Your Backyard, a Guide to North America's Bees. And so we talked a bit about that yesterday. And there are over 4,000 bees as pollinators species, and we have several hundred in Wisconsin. He was suggesting a variety of plants because there are some that are really small and they like a certain kind of flower, and others that are much bigger and so forth.
And he probably talked about habitat and making sure that you've got that open space, because so many of them are solitary bees.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
You know, we all think of honeybees and colonies and all that kind of thing, but you know,
most of them are solitary.
And so we have to think differently about how we deal with them.
And actually, for that person or anyone else for that matter, you might want to go back and listen online to that show, because there was a lot of really good information in there about homes for bees and things to plant and so forth to have them thrive.
Yep.
We have Scott in Appleton next. Hi, Scott.
Hi, Larry. How are you?
Great. Appreciate your call. What can we do for you?
If we can return to the clematis discussion, we have some on a west side wall. They do very well, but they get very top heavy. And I'm always wondering how much, either in the fall or in the spring, to cut back
sure.
the plant. I don't want to do more harm, but they really tend to bulk up towards the top, about at 6 to 8 feet.
Yeah. So clematis are divided into three different types, and that they're actually called A, B, and C, and it varies based on the type, how much you prune them back. So things that things like sweet autumn clematis, which is the white one that blooms in late summer, those can be cut back pretty extensively, down to probably about 2 or 3 feet high. Most of the others you don't want to cut back quite that far, but you could certainly, you know, if they're 6 or 7 feet tall, you could cut back certainly probably 2 to 3 feet, and you can do it in the springtime. Always cut back to right above where that node is, where the buds or the old leaves, where the leaves came out from last year, and it should be fine.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you very much.
Uh-huh. Yep, thanks a lot for calling. Darn, now his is on the west side of the house, right where mine was. Mine croak.
It really has to do, I think it has to do with the soil more than anything else. You've got to have that cool, moist soil. So those, if you have, this is one of those things, if you have that kind of clayey soil that a lot of people complain about, clematis likes that stuff.
Well, I am tired of spending money on clematis, I can tell you that.
Find something else.
I got to find something else. They kind of got turned into an expensive hobby. They were trying to grow clematis.
Yeah, I know.
Dolores in Kenosha, thanks for calling. Hi.
Oh, hi. I'm just laughing at what you just said. Just, my mother had a long stretch along the driveway. It was like a foot and a half wide, and she had stuff that just came back from seed every year, like the marigold, and she had a clematis there, and they were built on clay soil.
Uh-huh.
And that darn thing came back every year.
Yep.
But my my question was about Hoya. I have your basic little simple Hoya. Part of it's it's a combination. Part of it's green, part of it's variegated, and I want to. This probably needs to be repotted, number one. But it's doing really well because I don't bother it a lot. But I also want to propagate it, give some to my one daughter.
Okay. So this is one, off the top of my head, I don't remember if there's anything particular about Hoyas in propagating it, but I don't think so. I think you could take a regular stem or tip cutting and just root it. You may want to use some rooting powder, rooting hormone with it. One thing I haven't, when we've been talking about taking cuttings and rooting, always try to root in potting soil. Don't do the glass of water because the roots are physiologically different, and a lot of plants don't root in water, but they'll root really easily if you put them in potting soil.
Okay.
So I would say avoid that, you know, stick it in a glass of water on the kitchen windowsill, especially if you've had trouble with propagating things. So instead, just, you know, take a little cutting and make sure you've got a leaf or two on it and put it in some good potting soil, and
you
should be fine.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much.
Okay.
Thanks so much for calling. Barb Larson, horticulture educator for UW Extension in Kenosha County. Our guest, I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Glad to have you along as we take a look at your garden today or your gardening situation with Barb Larson, horticulture educator for UW Extension in Kenosha County. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks so much for joining us. You can reach us by phone if you'd like. We have some open lines. Get you on pretty quickly at 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. Suzanne, in Lake Mills up next. Hi, Suzanne.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have two kind of side beds near my home, near the house, that due to some big life changes and tending a big vegetable garden, have kind of fallen into postmodern neglect style garden.
Okay.
And I'm wondering the best way to
to get them back in order. There's a lot of weeds. I don't think there's much in there of value. And I'm wondering if there's something that I can do in the spring, if I can put down newspaper, cardboard, or something to help kind of start over.
So, and you may not know the answer to this question. Do you know, are most of the weeds and things that are in there, are they coming back from seeds, or are they annuals, or are they coming back from, are they perennials? Do you have any idea?
Gosh, I really don't know.
Okay, all right. So you certainly could try to start with just by, you know, heavily mulching, and you could use cardboard. You could use thick layers of newspaper. You could use, you know, back a few years ago, the lasagna method was, you know, where you'd layer everything in. You could certainly try some of those kinds of things. My biggest concern is that works great if it's almost all annual weeds and you don't have perennials like quackgrass in there.
Quackgrass is the worst.
So as long as it's that kind of stuff, even if you have some dandelions and that kind of thing, it'll come up and then it kind of shade it out and it may eventually kill them. And you can just do some pulling or cleaning up, that kind of thing. You might try that to start with and then see what happens.
You need to leave it on for a while.
Oh, yeah. Well, I would just leave it on most of the season.
Yeah.
And start out, and then you may even add, especially if you use cardboard or that, it'll decompose over the year, so you may need to add more stuff. Do you want to try to plant anything in it, or do you want to, are you okay leaving it go for a whole season?
Well, I mean, anything would look better than just overgrown mess. So I'm okay with leaving it go. I do like the idea that maybe I could even bring in some soil on top of it. And I actually do straw bale gardening for my vegetables and things. So I'm okay with kind of like building up to plant.
Yeah. So if you don't mind just letting it go for most of, or not all of the season, you could actually cover it with straw bales, Larry.
Straw bale gardening.
I'm trying to get rid of the weeds here. So
I know.
I would
That's
start.
Not a bad idea. I could just put bales all on top of it.
You could put the cardboard down and then put the bales on top of the cardboard.
I am shaking my head and throwing my hands up in the air. So let's get rid of the weeds first.
One of the beds has a couple of perennial bulbs and things. It seems kind of scattered throughout. I'm always happy to see them. And there's some hostas and things scattered in there.
Oh, all right. Okay, so then you don't want to get rid of those. My recommendation was going to be covering it with clear plastic and leaving it that way for the whole summer. And what that'll do is things will then germinate, or even if you have perennials, and they'll come up and just the heat and everything will kill a lot of the stuff.
Okay.
But since you've already got hostas in there, you've got some bulbs in there, you don't want to do that.
Or you could move those.
Move them, but I'd be concerned about moving weeds with it. I would go back to mulch it really well, just start taking good care of it and see what happens with it.
Okay, and two quick follow-up questions. One is, one of the beds, we sprinkled milkweed pod and seed in. And so I'm wondering, I mean, is that just going to obliterate anything in there? Is there any way to kind of like selectively, I don't know, maybe I'm asking too much.
You've got to be able to identify what those milkweed seedlings look like. So you should be able to look that up online and then just hand weed or use a hoe or something in the areas that are really bad and just keep after it. And then mulch, once you know what you want, mulch around everything else and try to reduce the seed germination.
Yeah.
Okay.
And obviously you could use an herbicide, but you try not to if it can be all.
And if you want to stick with kind of the organic herbicide, use corn gluten, which is also 10% nitrogen.
Interesting.
But if you have seeds germinating, like your milkweed seed, you can't use it.
Because
it prevents seed from germinating.
And then my last question is, I actually had a ton of bulbs in my basement in cardboard that I dug up and put them in cardboard boxes to store in my basement. And I meant to plant them this fall and didn't get to it. They're starting to
take some action, just little tiny shoots. And a friend of mine was telling me I could plant them in the spring. Is that true?
Sure, but they may not bloom at all, and some okay. may or may not survive. So spring blooming bulbs are actually active. Their root system is active in the wintertime.
Okay. Yeah.
And they're dormant in the summer. So, I mean, if they're sprouting, there's not much you can do. You're probably going to lose them anyway. I'd say throw them in and see what happens.
Okay, cool. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much.
Yep, thanks so much for calling. Appreciate it. Susan in Madison has a question. Hi, Susan.
Hi. I got two questions. First off, having an identification problem with plants that are, they grow outside Bayfield and they're tall and they're blue. And I know they're not native to Wisconsin, but they've also been, you can buy them in the different colors, you know, in a garden center and stuff. But I can't remember the name.
Are they lupins?
Lupins, that's it. Okay. Somebody who lives up there sent me a package of the seeds there and from up there. And what I wasn't sure was when you should plant those. If, you know, like in spring?
They can be planted in spring. I think you could even plant them now and get them going indoors and then transplant them.
Oh, really? Okay. Okay, any tricks to getting them going?
So I don't have my propagation book in front of me, so look up online to see if there's anything in particular for lupins, but I don't think there is.
So. I think it's just standard.
Yeah. And sometimes the best place to look up how to see if there's specialty things for seed, things from seed are some of the seed catalogs, because they will tell you how to propagate some of these things, especially things like some of the perennials and things.
Okay. Yeah. Very good. I appreciate the help.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And Mark in Mequon. Hi. Thanks for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. My quick question is this. I have some large trees in my yard, and I'm giving up on trying to keep the grass growing around them. But it's quite a big area, and I'm looking for a ground cover that I can plant around them. But wondering if there is something that available from that I can plant from seed, because it's a large areas, and trying to do it with individual plants from the garden center or something would just be cost prohibitive.
Sure, I understand. I'm trying to think of ones that are, the vast majority of ground covers are propagated by cuttings, because that's how they grow and spread really easily that way. So one of your options might be just even getting them started in one area, and then once they get going, taking cuttings that way. Or check with neighbors and friends that, you know, you could take cuttings and get them for free that way. Sometimes also there are a lot of groups that do plant sales in spring. That may be another option. I'm just off the top of my head. I'm sure there are some, and I would bet that there will be somebody that will send us either an email or call and tell us one that I will go, oh, why didn't I think of that? But right now I can't think of one off the top of my head.
There we go.
Yes, but I'm trying to not disturb the soil too much because they're very old trees, and I'm concerned about them.
Sure. And I appreciate that. That's great. And so, you know, anything that if you're going to be putting them in and you're disturbing down 3-4 inches is probably not going to harm those trees that much.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thanks a lot for calling. But, you know, realize that you're also planning competition for those trees.
Absolutely.
For water and resources. So you... You're gonna need to keep that in mind.
So your trees would like it best if you just put mulch down around them. The other is, which now it pops into my head, is I don't know what kind of trees he has, but look at Mother Nature So look at natives that would be growing in and around. My guess is he may have maple trees because they tend to be the ones that tend to shade things out. So what are the kinds of things that grow in maple forests and that kind of thing that would be native? A lot of those are going to be the spring ephemerals, the things that come up, bloom in the spring, and then die down.
Yep.
But at least it'd give you some color and interest during the early season.
Thanks, Mark. And Linda from Pewaukee, thank you for calling. What can we do for you?
Hi, thank you. I have a cactus that I got from someone quite a while ago, and I've never been able to identify it. It does not have prickly things on it. It has upright growing spikes, and it gets a flower that's fairly large, floppy, fuzzy, and star-shaped and maroon-colored. And first of all, I was wondering if you knew what it might be. And second of all, I'm having a die-off problem where the spikes mostly in the center just kind of shrivel up and break off. And I'm just wondering, because I've had these cactuses for a pretty long time, but I've never really been quite sure if I'm doing right by them, especially now.
Yeah, you know, I know that flower. I know that cactus, but I can't think of the name of it.
Oh, okay.
I had one.
It
died.
It's not ringing. I mean, it's not popping into my mind. What you might try is there are cactus societies. So you may want to try to find them online, send them a picture via email or something.
Post one up on our Facebook page.
Oh, yeah, that's true. You may find that way, too. You're
probably going to find it. But I like your idea. There's a couple of cactus societies. They are happy to help out, more than happy to help identify. So if you've got any kind of photo, but I know that flower. Actually, I didn't have it myself. I gave it to someone else as a gift. There's really quite pretty flower. And I cannot, for the life of me, maybe it'll come to me. Somebody else likely would.
Well, and you know, sometimes people describe things to me and it immediately, like the lupins a little bit ago, pops into my head what it is. And then there are other times where it's like, I have nothing comes up. So
I know exactly what you're talking about.
But we can't tell you what it is.
But I can't say what it is. Barb Larson, our guest today. Barb is a horticulture educator for the University of Wisconsin Extension. She's been in Kenosha County for a long time, does a marvelous job there, and great to have her with us for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Great to have you along today for this edition of Garden Talk. We are visiting with Barb Larson, horticulture educator for UW Extension in Kenosha County. I'm Larry Mueller. Great to have you sitting in and listening in as we talk about all kinds of things in the garden. Call in with your questions, 1-800-642-1234. That's the number. Go to our Facebook page. You can post there, post photos there. You can post questions there. And we'd love to hear from those as well. The Larry Mueller Show is the title of our Facebook page. And Barb, we've got something from Rebecca. A nice photo. This is up on Facebook.
Yep.
And she said, and a photo of a bunch of different seeds. She said, we found these seeds in the basement of a relative's house we're cleaning out. We got hollyhock, marigold, poppy, and others, all decades old, including hollyhock from 1969. Wow.
Yep.
Thought I should get some advice on these. I hear the term heritage or heirloom, but I have no idea what that really means and if these should be saved.
Okay. So let's start with, are they heritage or heirloom? It's hard to tell. Because there isn't any kind of definitive definition, often those are ones that are either open pollinated or they're not, they're kind of, and they're over 50 years old or even more. Sometimes they could be just an old hybrid kind of thing.
Yeah.
So it's probably impossible to know if they're heritage or heirloom or whatever. But it would be fun to see if any or of these would germinate.
Yeah.
So some seed will actually stay viable for thousands of years. They've been finding some in the Mideast in these desert climates that are good. So if they've been in a cool, dry place, it's possible that some of these seeds will still germinate. So you could even try, it looks like she's got pretty good amounts of them, just even try putting like 10 or 20 in a damp paper towel, rolling them up, and seeing if they sprout.
After about a week?
I would give them a couple of weeks. And see what happens with them. The other is you could try just seeding them out pretty heavily and see what pops up. So it might be fun to try.
I would. I think it'd be a lot of fun, to be honest. We had somebody had asked earlier, we were talking earlier about lupin, and Jeremy wrote in to suggest that the caller with the lupin seed should etch them before planting.
Yeah, and I kind of thought, in the back of my mind, I thought, I think they require what's called scarification, and that's etching or scratching or rubbing with a little bit of sandpaper or something like that to basically crack that hard seed shell. So, but a good online reference will tell you that.
And Paul emailed in that succulent that we were, with the big flower that we were trying to, I was trying to remember the name of, is Paul says, hey, it's got to be Staphylia. And I think that's probably a pretty good, that name sounds real familiar to me. So it's one that our earlier caller should look up for sure.
Yeah, I would. That's what one online. Look online see, for images and see if it looks, it matches. Yeah,
I bet it does. I bet it does. And let's see, did we have anything else? The name of the spreading geranium she referred to has the name Geranium sanguineum.
Sanguineum. Yeah. Well, we were talking about heuchera, but there was somebody earlier in the that mentioned that some of the geranium would be a good ground cover, and absolutely, that's an excellent suggestion. I'm glad they brought it in. And these are the perennial geraniums, and there are a number of different varieties or species. You know, the Geranium sanguineum is one of them, and she actually recommends one of the cultivars, but there are many others, and they're not invasive, and they also have kind of mounds. And some you can get some with blue, purple, almost purplish kind of flowers. A lot of them are pink flowered also. So another good option for that shade kind of ground cover.
Wendy in Sussex has something for us. Hi, Wendy.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. And Barb, this is an amazing time of the year to have this on. I'm so excited about gardening already.
Oh, good.
It's spring. I'm so hooked on it. My question to you is, I planted hydrangeas last year. I planted three different kinds. I planted the mini limelights, the Annabelles, and a zebra hydrangea.
Okay.
And I struggled with getting them to thrive all summer. And that's, so I'm kind of would like some help with trying to figure out how to get them to grow better. They had some small blossoms on them, but they didn't really grow as I had thought they would have for the first year. And then the second part of my question is, now with spring, I'm assuming they're going to come back to life. I'm really hoping. And with the old growth that's on them, do I cut that back, or do I just leave it and let the new stuff kind of take over in the plants?
Okay. So let's answer your questions backwards here. So starting with, should you cut them back? If there are old flower heads, you can trim off the flower heads, but otherwise, especially because you just put these in last year, they're still reestablishing their root system, and leave them. You don't want to cut them back at this point. So leave them alone. Don't prune them. And then the other is, these are woody plants, so they do sometimes take a little bit of time to get those root systems established. Hydrangeas also tend to be pretty heavy water users, especially as they're getting established. So you don't want to drown them, but you may want to make sure that they get adequate rainfall, or you keep them moist most of the summertime.
Okay.
So,
helpful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they like
exposure matter to them. I mean, which side of the house they're on, or if they have sun in the morning or sun in the afternoon.
Sun in the morning or afternoon doesn't make that much difference. They tend to usually be grown more in part shade, so east or west side of the house. The Annabelles can even be grown in shade, but I've also grown them in full sun for, so it, as long as they stay watered, they'll grow in, you know, full hot sun on the south side of a building. So they are pretty adaptable. And the ones you mentioned, the Annabelle, definitely the Annabelle and the Little Limelight are both considered, you know, really pretty tough and should do pretty well for you. The zebra, I haven't dealt with or don't know as much about how well it will do, but they should all be okay.
Okay, that's really good.
Patience.
They just need to give them a little bit more water, it sounds like.
Yep. Yeah, yeah. Give them a chance to get their root system established, and once those roots get established, then they'll start growing a little more actively.
Oh, great.
Okay.
All right. Yep, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yep, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Just to go back to Facebook for a minute, Lisa sent a photo. She is, says, so excited to share tomato and red jalapeno and shishito pepper seedlings that were started indoors the first week of February, which is plenty early.
Yeah. Yeah.
But these look really good now.
They look beautiful. My concern is that they don't get too tall because you can't get them outdoors until mid-May, late May, something like that, depending on where you are in the state. So make sure that you keep your light. It looks like she's got them under fluorescence or some type of artificial light. Make sure you keep that light within a couple of inches of the top of the plants. That will help keep them shorter and bushier rather than extending up for the light.
And run your hand over them every once in a while or turn the fan on them or something just to give them a little, I don't know, bodybuilding. But it really does help.
Oh, yeah, it does. That's a great idea. So, but they, that's exciting to see that.
Yeah, they look beautiful. Let's go to Bill in Oregon next. Hi, Bill.
Hi. I had a question for Barb.
Yeah.
We've got a lot that the soil's generally fairly alkaline. We have a good amount of mature white pines. There are a number of them that are they're the most densely planted, and they're along the road, and they're starting to yellow. And we're not really seeing it with the rest of them, but I'm just wondering if there's anything that you know of that causes that, or any remedies, or and if the alkaline soil, you know, if there's anything that we can do to possibly make those pines happier. Cause
So the needles are yellowing and then falling off, or what?
Well, yeah. I mean, we're just getting it on the ones on the road, the ones that are, I mean, it's not the most hospitable location pines, but the ones that are mature, I mean, most of them look pretty happy. You know, it's just the one, you know, I don't know whether it's some proximity to the road with road salts possibly, or if it's because they are the most densely planted, you know, of any of the pines on our lot.
Sure.
And wasn't sure if that was the cause, or if they just.
I think it could be a combination, which often is what's going on. And I'm also assuming that when you're talking about they're yellowing, the needles are, even the newer needles are all the way to the ends are yellowing.
Yes.
So, okay. So I always want to check to make sure it's not the inner old growth that's kind of.
They're not turning reddish at all.
No.
Okay. So they certainly don't like salt, and so over the years, even if it's not salt spray injury, which it doesn't sound like that, but salt off washing off the road and into the soil slowly actually causes the soil to collapse. So it's not just the amount of sodium that might be in the soil, it also physically destroys the structure of the soil. So that could be part of the problem. Certainly, in being an alkaline soil, we can grow white pines in southern Wisconsin. But if the soil over the years, sometimes that alkaline soil can cause problems too. Being planted really tightly together, probably less of a problem, but they would be competing more for nutrients if they're really tightly planted together. So I have a feeling you have a combination of things. Mm-hmm. And it's also going to be a little more challenging to try to figure out how you might deal with this. One way to deal with the road salt is to either hope for good rainfall in the spring that helps to actually dissolve some of that sodium and wash it lower down into the ground, or you can do it. You could also, are they growing fairly rapidly yet? Are they putting on 12 to 18 inches of growth a year?
Oh, they're growing.
Okay.
The growth is active. They otherwise seem, to be fairly normal. It's just that, I'm looking at them right now compared to all the other pines, yellow stands out.
Yeah, yeah. The other is, especially this time of year, if those are the ones that are getting the predominant wind, they'll yellow out from a little bit of winter desiccation, too. So they could green up once we really get into the growing season. So,
well, we noticed that last year they never fully greened. And they seem to be yellowing more over time.
Okay.
And I don't know if it's me snow blowing, salt at them or,
It could be.
Yeah,
some of it.
Don't do that.
Yeah, don't do that.
I was just starting to realize, just thinking about all the ways the salt could actually get on them, and there's, running the snow blower and certain other things can, I may be contributing to the problem.
So that you could also have a soil test done, and I would look for the micronutrients more than anything else. So is there enough iron in the soil and manganese and some of those, which is a little more advanced soil test, but it's possible that you may be a little deficient in one of those kinds of things, so you could have that done.
Doesn't sound like a disease. I was thinking of white pine blister rust or something like that, but it doesn't sound like that either.
No, as long as the needles look, it's just the color of them, but there's no banding or anything like that, that you're right. I don't think it's a disease either. I think it's a cultural environmental kind of problem, which are much harder. So this is kind of take real good care of them, keep salt away from them if at all possible, and salt spray and see what happens.
And I'm glad you mentioned soil tests, because Jennifer also wanted to know, she says, is there either a state run or a private service that she can use to test her soil?
So yes and yes. There is UW has a soils lab. It's now located in Marshfield only.
Marshfield, Wisconsin.
Marshfield, Wisconsin. And if you go online and look for University of Wisconsin Soil Lab, all the information is on there, including how to take a soil test and where to send it in and those kinds of things. There are also private soil testing labs available, too, and there are a number of them in the Wisconsin area and in the Midwest.
Yeah, you Google and you're going to get a bunch. And there's another one that I wanted to bring up. Sarah asked this a while back on Facebook, if you could recommend raspberry varieties that are good for fresh eating, ever-bearing, fall-bearing. She's in a zone five.
Five. And we do have, once again, a nice extension publication that lists fruit variety recommendations. So go to the University of Wisconsin Extension Learning Store site, which is our publication site, or you can go to our basic horticulture website, which is hort.uwex.edu, and that links
same
to
information.
All of those things.
Yep. So, good. Let's go to Mary and Almond next. Thank you, Mary, for calling.
Oh, thanks, Larry. I really appreciate your shows, all of them. I just live for them almost.
Thank you.
I just want to respond to Barb and also to that gentleman that called in about the blue flower that he wanted in woodlands. And I'm just going to give you my history. About 1983, I put a small plot in a piece of land that we had just bought, and I thought, well, it can kind of cover that really nicely. And then a couple of years ago, I found out that periwinkle, or that vinca minor, is actually very ecologically invasive. It had spread to over 60 feet wide of a diameter of this just total vinca. It outcompeted absolutely everything. And so then we tried to get rid of it, and we used some pretty harsh chemicals. Some of them, like brush be gone, weed be gone,
all kinds of things, and nothing seemed to really affect it until we looked up online, and you said you had to combine different kinds of chemicals, and you had to put a surfactant in to actually make it work, and you had to do it at a certain time of the year, which I think was in fall. So we are still not through with it. It's still taken over a part of a maple oak area and also another area that we put it in. And it's, I'm not sure, unless you had it between some pretty nice concrete and blacktop, you know, I would really hesitate putting it out in a garden.
Sure. Yeah. And I really appreciate you sharing your experience. You know, this is the catch-22. When we ask for something that's a ground cover, it is going to be a plant that's going to spread fairly quickly and in some cases pretty aggressively, and especially if it's in areas where the environmental conditions are favorable to it. And so I'd say it's the catch-22, because how do you know, or what's going to happen with them? So what do you choose and how do you decide it? So one way to try to avoid that is to go more towards the natives. But even native plants in some places can become invasive. So we go back to, there's no such thing as a perfect plant. We all have different experiences, but yes, absolutely, Vinca minor has become a problem, especially in some areas. So it's just like where we talked about the ajuga, and my caution with ajuga also. So same kinds of things.
Yeah,
they aren't native. So
and there is a blue native. It's called a woodland flax. It grows about maybe, I don't know, 6 inches high.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it does like the shade. The kind of invasives I don't mind are the ones I can pull out easily.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that was the one thing about Vinca. It has an incredible root system.
Yep.
I mean, it took out just everything native, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you, Mary, for calling. It's a good reminder about some of the issues that can come up with some of these plants. Appreciate your call very much. I want to give Jen a chance to join us from Mattawa, Minnesota. Is that how you pronounce it? Jen, are you there? Oh, I wonder if we lost her. Must have. Let's go to Ruth in Wausau. Hi, Ruth.
Hi. My question involves sedum. I have the autumn joy sedums, quite a few of them planted, and they do very well. They multiply. Sometimes I have to even divide them.
Mm-hmm.
There's a similar area, and I wanted the look of the purple sedum, and I wanted, because it has background grasses, and they just don't do anything. They're spindly. They don't multiply or anything.
Have you tried different cultivars or different varieties?
I don't know. I just go and look at the potted plants, and I look at the purple ones, and that's what I get.
Yeah. So you may want to look at trying some different cultivars or different varieties. So there are some that are purple. You know, first of all, as we all know, Autumn Joy really is one of those, you know, really great performers, and that's
right.
Why you found it. It's also primarily green, and the leaves are primarily green, and that means it's a little more vigorous. When we go to some of the other colors in leaves, sometimes they don't have quite as much chlorophyll. They may not grow quite as actively, and so that may be part of what you're seeing. I'm assuming with if your Autumn Joy is growing fine, you have the right kind of conditions for growing the other sedums. So I would just, you may want to do just a little more research, ask around, talk to some other gardeners up in the Wausau area, find out if they're growing any of the purple leaf sedums and what they have better luck with. So that may help you out.
And with that, we have to close off. Ruth, thank you so much for calling. And Barb, once again, great show.
Thank you.
It was wonderful.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun today.
You'll be back, won't you?
Absolutely.
Okay. I figured she would. Barb Larson, horticulture educator for UW Extension in Kenosha County. And believe me, she will be back, and we will do this all over again. And I'm sure as this gardening season goes along, she will definitely be back. Next week at this time, we'll talk with the Obrick about the Obrick Gardens Flower Show. Monday, we visit about personal computers, iPhone encryption, and Windows 10, and get your computer questions answered. Stay with us. Lots more in store here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.